are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I'm never going to dance again.
Now he's going down like George Michael at a highway rest stop at midnight.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I'm not going to eat any crow. He's been every bit as quality.
You'll eat the crow.
Yeah, no, you definitely have to eat that.
No, I don't have to eat any fucking crow. We'll see what happens when the season's over.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
It doesn't matter if you're pitching in the biggest ballpark in the world and suppressing the home runs if you can't find the goddamn strike zone.
Drop Justin Upton and fuck that guy.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 151 of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits baseball podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Mike and Matt. Matt, how you doing?
Pretty good, man. Excited for this show. I've heard a lot about this crazy Kevin guy until I never talked to him, so see how it's going to go.
Yeah, this should be probably our most entertaining show of the season because we have our good friend Tejo Bedick, who we bring on in a moment. But first, let's introduce our other co-host, Mike Warner. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I tell you what, I'm a little bit like hurt on this Dwight Gooden and Daryl Strawberry news. Like, I don't know if you, I know you, Justin, are really into the whole AA stuff and everything, but like Dwight Gooden's not in good shape, and it sucks because he's one, in my opinion, one of my favorite pitchers of all time. Just his stuff is one of the all-time greats, and to see him going through this process and then have Daryl Strawberry kind of get in on it kind of sucks to see.
Yeah, I haven't seen a whole lot about this. I'm actually searching for the story as we talk right now. Someone in commented on my article for Fangraphs earlier today. I did a Daily Notes column.
These are always good. I wait for this.
Oh no, they just mentioned it. Like it wasn't bad or anything like that. So and I kind of chatted with him back and forth in the comments section, and I talked about I've mentioned numerous times on this podcast before. I'm clean and sober. I have been for over 11 years. I work in drug and alcohol treatment, and have for a long time in my professional life. And it's sad when you see stuff like this, but this is the way of addiction. It doesn't matter how long you've been clean and sober for. There's always a chance that you can relapse, and addiction kills more people than recover from it. So, we, of course, all wish him the best of luck. Hopefully he finds what he's looking for, no matter what that is. It's unfortunate, sad news. But on a much more happy note, we have our good friend Tejo Bedick from Razzball.com returning to the show for the first time since kind of the new takeover. He joined us earlier in the preseason to talk a little bit about the Mariners, but he is back in full force. Tejo, how you doing?
I'm back and better than ever. Thanks, guys. Glad to be here. Now I feel bad for abusing cocaine, and I hope that's not a problem going forward. But if Daryl Strawberry is calling you out, it must be a serious issue, because that guy isn't by no means living a great life. So I don't know what's going on there. But thank you for having me. I couldn't be more excited.
Tejo, for those people who don't know you, give a little plug for yourself. Tell them where they can reach you on Twitter or Snapchat, and then what you do over Razzball.
Twitter at Lord Bedick. That's it. Snapchat, Lord Bedick. Razzball, Tejo Bedick. I am a normal football analyst. I'm on Fantasy Pros with Justin Mason. Welcome to the club. I do baseball, but I kind of slacked off a little bit this year and didn't do my huge, but did a few here and there, some guest spots. But football, I'm in once a week at least, do the podcast there with Jay at there, and then I do a weekly show called Off the Record with Andy Singleton and a doctor named Salim Parekh from Duke University, and we do kind of like a video thing, and we'll have to have you guys on because we've had some pretty cool guys on this year, and it's been pretty fun. So I'm looking forward to that. And then we also have the Fantasy Dream League, which Mason and I are very, 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 very close as we are collaborating on many a thing this season.
Yep. We are definitely collaborating on way too much stuff. The Fantasy Dream League should be an interesting thing for those of you who don't know what that is. It's been taken over by Rosball, which is a great thing. It'll definitely get some more notice, but it's a group of fantasy analysts, experts, whatever you want to call them, and we're going to record videos and talk trash. I think it was promoted as a real-life version of the league. So every week we're going to talk shit, and I'm going to murder everybody in this league.
Ooh. Yeah, it's quite the interesting cast there. A couple people from Rasball, a couple people I have no idea who they were, but they ended up being pretty entertaining people. We got a woman on there, Stacey Stern. She's pretty hot, and she's pretty knowledgeable. Motown Mahler is a pretty frightening individual. Won a lot of money on DraftKings. We'll see if he can back up all the crap he's talking, because he's talking way too much, and I can't wait to put it on him.
Yeah, he's definitely the guy I want to put in his place the most, because he's talking a lot of trash. They're in there, and Ralph is talking a lot of trash, too. Oh, right. But, yeah, it should be a lot of fun. Definitely check that out. We'll be tweeting that out all season long. And definitely go and listen to Taya Hole's podcast over at Rasball and the Off the Record show you do that you guys put on YouTube. That's some good stuff. We definitely appreciate you coming on.
But let's. Anytime. My only question is what took so long. But anyway, we can just skip that question and just move forward and act like it never happened.
It's because we always feel like you're in our lives. You know, we're always talking to you on Twitter, so we always get our dose of Tay Hole like every day.
I haven't talked to you on Twitter for quite some time.
let's jump right in though, and let's talk about some baseball players. Rest of the season, and then moving forward into next year. Let's start with Trey Turner, who I'm going to eat some crow on this one because I pretty much said I don't really care for Trey Turner. I don't really think he's going to be that valuable this year. And since kind of emerging recently, he has been fantastic. He has 4 home runs, which is kind of crazy. He's already stolen 13 bases in 153 plate appearances. Tejo, what are your thoughts on Trey Turner?
I was kind of with you. I wasn't expecting so much, but I mean, this guy is delivering, man. I got to say, he is really getting it done right now. I mean, he's what, 13 steals or something, hitting second base quicker than a Kardashian at the BET Awards show after party. I mean, 4 bombs, 8 doubles, totally reinvigorated the lineup for a while. Though the BABIP's a little high, I think it's like 370 around there or something. He's walked only like 5 times the entire time he's been up. The walks are very low. I think the average has been dropping and will probably continue to drop a little bit, but he's stealing and he's fast and I like it.
Yeah, the 5 walks are pretty concerning. He's only walking at a 3% clip. He's a guy without a full-time position. They've been playing him a little bit at second. They've been playing him in the outfield. I'm not ready to completely buy in for this season. I think for next season, though, I think we could expect that they will find a way to get him in the lineup full time. And while I don't think he's ever going to be necessarily a double-digit homer guy, he's got the speed to steal 30 to 40 bags in a season. And if he has middle infield eligibility because he's either playing there or because he plays enough games this year, that could be fairly valuable. Matt, what are your thoughts on Trey Turner?
Well, I think Trey Turner has got to be the fastest white boy in the majors, right? I mean, I think that's pretty apparent by the 13 steals he's put up. But, I mean, Trey Turner, he's playing over his head this year, so fantasy owners, I mean, you have to love it so far. The multi-position eligibility is awesome. He doesn't walk, and he like Tejo and Justin's already stated, he's propped up by the BABIP, and he's going to be a very batting average-dependent guy because he won't walk a lot. And that batting average is giving him the steals because he's getting a chance on base. And he's hitting for a lot more power than I ever thought he would. 8 doubles and 6 triples already to go with 4 bombs. He's slugging .531 in the majors. That's not true talent level for him by any means. He's going to be a good player. He's not this good this year, but you have to enjoy it. You mean you waited forever for him. And just hopefully you kept him and didn't get frustrated and cut him because Dusty Baker was fucking around with you so long. But, I mean, I like Turner long term. Next year he's definitely going to be a starter at one of the positions. So, I mean, long term keeper, you have to love it. But he's playing over his head this year, so enjoy it.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Trey Turner?
You definitely have to like what you've been seeing. I do know that a lot of fantasy owners were probably hoping he was going to be shortstop eligible. And at least for next season, it's looking like it's going to be second base and outfield. Now, you can't really complain about that because you can still slot him in your middle infield and you'll feel okay about it. His biggest skill for fantasy is certainly his ability to steal bases. And he's putting that, you know, pretty much, that's coming to fruition right now. He has the highest speed score among any second baseman in the second half thus far. That's even higher than Billy Hamilton and Jonathan Villar. He has an even better, you know, as far as the BABIP, I understand it's certainly due to regress, but he's posted a plethora of high BABIPs in his minor league career. So this isn't necessarily a guy that is going to have a, you know, 370 BABIP all the way, you know, throughout his career. But, you know, people, you know, it doesn't usually end up being, stable like pitchers. Usually you always know it's going to end up being a 300 BABIP, you know, with pitchers towards the long run, or it's going to regress to that point. With hitters, they kind of make their own BABIP. So Trey Turner is always a guy that's had high contact ability, always been able to put the bat to the ball, always had high batting average. So if he's going to continue to lead off, which is certainly what looks to be the case this year and moving forward, plus all the stolen bases that comes with it, he's going to be in front of Bryce Harper for the foreseeable future, at least. I think that he's going to be a top 15 second baseman at least the rest of the way, and then going into next year as well.
Do you think, because of his prospect pedigree and how long everybody's waiting for him, and then kind of his hot start since his call-up, that he is a guy that will be overdrafted next year, Tejo?
Probably, maybe a tad, but maybe not. I like guys like this who still have kind of the upside, so I'm kind of feeling it. I'm not really sure what his ADP would be right now, or I don't even really have a guess at what it's going to be, but, you know, it's definitely a possibility. The young guys definitely get overhyped, especially when they finish hot their first year, and then a lot of times they disappoint.
Mike, you think he'll be overdrafted or probably about fair value?
I think he'll definitely be overdrafted, in my opinion. I don't know if there's any way around it, personally. Going to drafts this year, I think he was, let me check real fast. He was, 173 was his average draft pick. So that's, you know, I think that you at least see him as a top 150 player going into next year, probably even higher than that. And I wouldn't be taking him there because, again, you know, his biggest skill is stolen bases. We could still see his batting average fluctuate. We've seen him strike out about 20% of the time currently, you know, and the fact that he's not walking means that his plate discipline just isn't there quite yet. But, you know, you are going to get the steal. So I still think he's a top 200, 175 player, but I think he's going to be taken higher than 150. And the second base position is just so deep. You know, we've talked about middle infield, specifically shortstop, a lot, but, you know, second base is insanely deep as well. You know, Anthony Rendon, Jonathan Schoop, Ben Zobrist, even Logan Forsyth later on, Javier Baez, who I would take gladly above Trey Turner next year and the rest of this year, are guys that I think, you know, will be going about the same, if not later than Trey Turner next year. Maybe not Rendon, but in, you know, specifically, I think that Turner is going to be a guy that's going to get overdrafted.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And also, I mean, you know, I think we're going to have to worry less about his playing time next year. I believe, if I'm reading this right, that Ben Revere is going to be a free agent. But that means that he probably is a center fielder going forward, which limits his value if he doesn't have middle infield eligibility. And if he's playing there every day, he's not going to gain it back at some point. Like, he's not going to be the shortstop of the future, it looks like, more than likely in Washington. So, I think he's going to be overdrafted. I wouldn't be surprised if you see him right around the top 100.
I was going to say around top 75, honestly, because yeah, the steals.
I think he's going to go there, and at that price, I'm out. But I can understand why people are hyped about him. I'm just not going to. I don't feel you're setting yourself up for very much profit if you're taking him that high.
No, you nailed that. He's not. I mean, it's a 3.5% walk rate. is a severe hindrance to the ceiling. And that's the minor leagues. He hasn't put up very good walk weights. You would, as well as you would think for being an advanced college hitter coming up to the minors. So the walks will never be there. I'm confident in saying that. But the steals make raise the floor, but the ceiling isn't that high either with the walks. So you have to get what you're going to get what you pay for, and you're not going to get value like you said. So I'm with you.
Let's move on and talk about Gary Sanchez, who's been pretty good since his call up to the major leagues. Matt, you're a resident prospect guru. What is your thoughts on Gary Sanchez moving forward and then into next year?
Me and Mike talked about him on the prospect pod last time we did it, and I said he was a top 10 catcher the rest of the way, so he's proven me right so far. I like the power, the walks again with him. Again, he's obviously not a guy that's walked very much in the minors either, but I think it's safe to say that he's a little bit better than the Jesus Montero 2.0 he kind of had that he was kind of getting tagged with, because he's been around in the minors so long, but he's only 23. I love him going forward, and I love him for next year. Obviously, again, he's not going to slug 738 like he is now, like clearly. But, I mean, I could see him being a solid 20-homer guy next year, which is value for the catcher spot.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Gary Sanchez moving forward?
I love Gary Sanchez. I've, you know, had a deep admiration for him. I thought he was going to possibly come up and start the year with the Yankees. Obviously, that didn't happen. But we're seeing a guy that, you know, certainly is showing that he has legit power. Obviously, it's not to this. You know, he's like fourth in ISO among catchers in the second half, tied for fourth in home runs. You know, I think that he is a 20 home run guy at the catcher position next season. I think that, you know, he is, borderline top 10 at the position. And he's somebody that I think you can wait on as well. And, you know, if he is overdrafted, which could happen since, you know, the position as a whole has just been, you know, worse than mediocre, you know, this year, you know, you could see him possibly overdrafted and, you know, being a top 7-8 guy coming into drafts based on just possible ceiling. But, you know, he's not hitting the ball as hard as I, you know, had hoped he would. The strikeout rate is, you know, okay, but something that he can certainly work on. He's a rookie. It's going to take some time. So, you know, as much as I love him, I'm going to kind of temper my expectations for the rest of this year and going into next year as well. I think this is a guy that you're just going to kind of have to monitor, and you know, I would safely place in the top 10, but wouldn't overdraft next year, which I think is going to end up being the case.
Tail, are you a big fan of Gary Sanchez?
And I love Gary Sanchez. Sorry, I just get lost when Mark is just spitting off these numbers, these verbs, these words. He's just, oh, that's hot. Yeah, Sanchez has just been scorching, man. I mean, I feel bad because I was really feeling Zunino for a second on the Mariners, and he was kind of hot, and I was like, pick up Zunino everywhere, and somebody was like, or if you're desperate for a catcher, Zunino's the guy, and he's like, even over Gary Sanchez? And I was like, yes, no question. So now I don't know if I've heard from that guy since, whoever asked me that question. So I don't know. I don't know what happened there. I don't know.
Guess who's right behind in ISO at the catcher position in the second half to Gary Sanchez? Mr. Zunino.
Yeah, I think he's been good enough to where it doesn't make me look terrible. You know,
oh, breaking news. Gary Sanchez just homered as we're speaking.
Oh, my God.
Jesus. To put things in perspective with Sanchez, though, I mean, like, he's 2 years younger than Zunino, and Zunino was a first-round pick in 2012, and he's still, you know what I mean? Like, Sanchez has been around for a while, but he really hasn't.
And I feel like this season really was catapulted from him having a spectacular Arizona Fall League as well. He's sure. Just really built that momentum from the beginning of the year all the way through, you know. So, you know, he's riding one of those seasons that, you know, is awesome for him. But we also have to, like, monitor it because, you know, we know that the catcher position is just, in general, a spot where a lot of guys mature later on in their careers as opposed to right at the beginning, you know.
It was interesting because I was Baseball America. I was reading an article about him, and they do tools grades for every league in the minors, and he was the top rated catcher for the International League at AAA, which I thought was strange because, you know, going up, you hear how terrible he was behind the plate, but he's been great, and from the little bit I've seen, he looks pretty good back there too. So that's even more going to help him because he's definitely going to stay a catcher now. So that was an uncertainty in the past. So that's good.
Well, and I mean, he was a guy that, I mean, he was signed by the Yankees when he was like 16, 17 years old. So, like, I mean, people tend to kind of overreact when, especially when catchers don't seem to be panning out defensively early on. But these are guys in a position that are going to be slow roasted. They're going to take time. That's why we've heard his name for so long. Coming into tonight's game before the home run, he was averaging a home run per 11 plate appearances. Like, that's insane.
Yeah, he's 50% home run to fly ball. That's not going to happen.
I mean, he's been absolutely insane. A 400 BABIP. You know, the numbers are going to come down, but I agree with Mike in terms of I think he's a top 10 catcher probably going into next season, as long as he is going to be getting a good fair amount of playing time. That'd be my only fear.
Over the course of his career, how many 30 homer seasons does he have?
Three.
That's a good number. I was going to say four, actually. I like Gary Sanchez a lot.
Yeah. Let's move on. Let's talk about Steven Strasburg, who was placed on the DL after I wrote up these show notes. I was a little bit worried about what we'd seen out of him in the last couple starts. Hits the DL today on Monday with elbow soreness. Tejo, what are your thoughts on Strasburg for the rest of this season, then moving into next year?
Oh my goodness, he usually goes the opposite way, right? he's usually, you know, likes to make me look horrible, like when I predict him to win the Cy Young like I did for 2 years in a row, and he's just garbage to start the year, and then as soon as I start trashing him nonstop, he ends the year like he's like the best pitcher in baseball. This year, he flips it around. Now he's going down like George Michael at a highway rest stop at midnight, you know, that type of thing. And he's really just like, I mean, I don't know, man. It's disturbing. Now the elbow, he finally, at first I was like, damn, maybe he shouldn't have even signed the contract so early. Now that he's balling out like this, he might have got paid more. Now maybe genius, especially if it's a real elbow problem. But yeah, he's just been getting tagged up lately, and I am concerned. Because when he's bad, he's bad. And when he's good, he's one of the best. But I'm highly concerned. And this could be a dagger in Washington's season.
I ate some crow on a Washington National early on in the episode. Mike, you are a big Steven Strasburg proponent coming into the season. What say you in terms of rest of the season and moving forward?
I'm never going to dance again. Strasburg pisses me off to no end. That's what he does to me. He's been a top 15 starter this year. So I'm not saying, I'm not going to eat any crow. He's been every bit as quality.
You'll eat the crow.
Yeah, no, you definitely have to eat that.
No, I don't have to eat any fucking crow. We'll see what happens when the season's over. But, you know, as far as, you know, in fantasy leagues, what are you going to do with Strasburg this year? You're going to put him on your DL. That's what you're going to do. So, and then you're going to pray to the elder gods that Tejo Benedict has in his back closet that he ends up coming back this year. Basically his last two starts, you know, were the problems. And obviously in Colorado, you can forgive that, the fact that he got absolutely annihilated there. Now against Atlanta, you can't forgive that as much. Giving up six runs to them is not really a recipe for success. To be fair, he hasn't done amazing against them this year. But regardless, I think for this season, all you can do is sit him on your bench, pray that, you know, from what Mike Rizzo, the GM of the Nationals, says, he thinks that everything is structurally sound. He's going to go for an MRI. So by the time you guys are listening to this, you more than likely will have some more news than we currently have on Monday, the 22nd here. So hopefully you can kind of gauge where he's at health wise the rest of the way. If this is a situation where he's going to be out for, you know, the next 4 to 6 weeks, then that's obviously a situation where you can drop him in redraft leagues. And Keeper Dynasty, I would have tried to sell him earlier this year, honestly, because there would have been no time better, in my opinion, to sell him at his highest value. This is just always going to be the problem with Strasburg. He has all the talent in the world, but he always has injury issues. He is probably coming close to that Tommy John honeymoon period. This is just something that you always have to worry about with him. And, you know, going forward, I think that he's more of a top 20 to 25 starter if everything is structurally sound with his elbow. If not, then, you know, we'll kind of look at things going into the offseason.
Yeah, he exited that Tommy John honeymoon period. This is about the time where if someone's going to get a second Tommy John, this is usually when it happens, which is scary. So, you know, unfortunately for me, I traded for him earlier this year in the Barfa Bay Area Industry League because I needed the pitching, traded Goldschmidt for him and E5. I think I got my money's worth, you know, considering the pairing, but it still hurts for the stretch run. You know, like Mike said, you got to stash him in hopes that he's coming back. You know, maybe they just give him some time off so that way he's ready for the playoff run and hope for the best. I think this is something we need to really start building into his value, though, for future seasons because he is out of the Tommy John window and it's he's a guy that hasn't been healthy really at any point in his career. Good for him signing that contract. It's it was perfect timing for him if this is serious. Matt, what's your thought on Strasburg?
Yeah, I always scoop him up in a redraft league or two, but I think that might be out the window for me now too. I mean, this dude is so soft. He always spends a year on the always spends 15 days at least on the DL every single season he's been in the majors. This elbow concern, they're playing it off like it's not much of a concern, which it might not be, and maybe they're just going to reactivate him when the rosters expand right away. But if that's the case, why is he going for an MRI? I think there's more to it here, and hopefully I'm wrong, but I don't think he throws a pitcher again this year.
All right, let's move on and talk about Dansby Swanson of the Atlanta Braves. A surprise call-up, not just that he was called up this season, but that he was called up before September, before the rosters expand. A surprising move for a team who's literally fighting right now for the number one overall pick in next year's draft. Matt, again, prospect guru, what are your thoughts so far on what you've seen from Dansby Swanson, and then what do you expect from him next season?
Well, my initial thoughts was I was kind of surprised when he was getting called up because he was actually struggling, and he was struggling in Double A when before he got called up. His last couple games, he was hitting for no power, and that's the weird thing with him. Like he's an advanced defensive shortstop, of projected to be right now. I'd say he's probably about average. The hit tool projects to be a little bit above average, but he's never going to be a guy that's going to hit for more than 12, 15 homers a year. His calling card is he's going to hit at the top of the lineup. He really can't right now. He doesn't have the skill set for it now in the major leagues. I mean, he's fantasy irrelevant for this year and quite honestly, probably next year also. He will be a good player in the long term, but he doesn't have that plus tool that makes him really exciting for fantasy leagues. His best asset again is the defense and his age and being cost controlled. He's going to play shortstop for 10, 12 years. But, I mean, he's not a remarkable offensive player by any means. He's a better real-life player than fantasy. I'm not that excited about it, to be honest.
Tail, what are your thoughts on Swanson?
Not exciting at all. Like, boring. Like, what are we going to – what is to see here fantasy-wise? I'm glad they got him. He's going to be a solid player. He's kind of like, I don't know, like the Nicky Hilton – of shortstops, pretty bland, pretty boring. I mean, just not hot, not too sexy.
Flat chested.
Nothing really to see there. A little something to suck on still, but not a lot. You know what I'm saying? Not a lot to play with. Now, I'm not really excited about that. Can anyone explain what the Braves are doing? The Matt Kemp trade, I don't understand. Swanson's cool. They got it for Shelby Miller. It's all good. If he develops into anything whatsoever, I'm going to take it. I'm just confused as to why, if everybody thinks that this guy is such a, you know, kind of a everyday, Walt Weiss was a comparison I saw the other day by a dude with
That's
no
a good one.
Sideburns on MLB. I just, like, why do guys like that go number one overall? If they don't have major upside, why do you take them number one overall? It just confuses me. I don't like it. I don't understand it. If people thought all along this guy doesn't have, like, major upside, what is he doing going at number one overall? That's what I'm more interested in.
Yeah, I didn't get the pick when they took him. I've not been a big fan of Dansby Swanson. You can go back to last year's podcast and listen to me rail a little bit about him going number one overall. I think if you've got him, now's like the perfect time to sell him, because you'd be like, look, he's a number one overall pick, and he's already at the major league level. So, like, if you got him in a keeper or dynasty league, try to sell him right now for, you know, what a top dollar, because I think right now you probably could get away with it. I don't think he's ever going to develop into anything special for fantasy. I think Matt nailed it when he said he's a better real-life player than he is a fantasy asset. I mean, Andrelton Simmons was a fantastic defensive shortstop. Doesn't do you a whole lot of good in fantasy, though. You know, and Swanson may be a very good defensive shortstop. He may produce kind of some decent numbers, you know, batting at the top of the lineup, but I don't think he starts the year in the majors next year, personally, anyways.
No, I think he does. I think he's up to stay. Yeah, they knew that he was going to be up to stay with opening the new park next year, so they weren't worried about the service time. That's why they kind of rushed him up this year, I think. Get some feet wet and coming in next year ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, unless he figures something out, I think they're going to have a hard time. Well, I mean, they're going to have a hard time putting a competing team on the field anyways, so I guess I guess they could just use him as, you know, ticket bait. But
exactly. Yep.
I don't know. I don't want anything to do with Dansby Swanson in any format. Mike, what are your thoughts on Swanson?
I mean, you guys have pretty much hit, you know, every point that I would say. I don't think he's even viable in NL only right now, unless you just need to accrue some at-bats and get some type of production. Maybe you can, you know, go with him there, but I think I disagree about his upside. I think that his upside is 2020, you know, when he, you know, matures a bit more. I've, you know, liked Swanson a lot. I've watched him play a lot. Not, you know, in the immediate near future or near past here, because I watched him a lot in college, but, you know, at least for now, he's not somebody that's fantasy viable. I also don't think he's fantasy viable next year. It's going to take some time for him to, you know, really reach that ceiling, if it ever comes, but he has a high contact rate, which is something I always like to see, and you know, he has the ability to take walks, so you know, as time goes on, I think we can gauge, you know, his value a little bit more. But I do think that, you know, at the shortstop position, having a guy that has the upside to go 2020, that's valuable in keeper dynasty league. So, you know, and take that for what it's worth.
I'm glad you said the 2020. I think it's going to be a weird 2020 with him. I could see him being a 20 stolen base threat early. And then as he gets bigger, he's going to slow down, and then he'll be maybe a 20-homer threat, but he won't steal 20 bags.
I think the speed
is like above average now, and if he gets bigger, it's going to go down to average. Not many average runners are stealing 20 bags, so I'd be surprised if he does both in a season. But he can. The skill set's there. I don't see it. I'm going to put the Thompson stamp on it that he's not going to do it. So take that for what it's worth. It's worth a lot, but I mean, you know, that's just how I see it.
Let's go ahead and move on to Miguel Sano, who hasn't been himself as of late, been struggling a little bit. Does have 6 home runs in the second half, but not really what we've expected from him. We haven't seen the huge power output that if you drafted him where you did, you really needed for your team. He's also hitting .236 in the second half. Tao, what are your thoughts on Miguel Sano so far this year?
Highly disappointed here, man. I mean, I think I predicted 40 for him at the beginning of the season, and then it started off with him playing all these different positions, and I'm like, man, this is going to end up better than I thought. First base, third base, outfield. I was like, oh my God, this couldn't be better. This is going to be awesome. And then he was terrible, and then in August he started heat raking. Like the first week, I think he hit 4 or 5 in the first week there, and then he's just tailed off again. And it's insane. Like, I mean, I'm really confused. I thought he finally had it kind of dialed in last year off the Tommy John surgery. Thought he was in for a big time year. Thought Minnesota was going to be a decent team, and it just hasn't happened, man. I'm sort of concerned. I think I'll still be buying next year. He's the kind of guy that I get when I get stuck on a guy like this. It usually takes a few years to wash the stank off for me. So I'm probably still going to be drafting him next season, but I'm very, very saddened by his performance thus far.
He's one of those guys that as long as he doesn't have like a huge September, I think is going to come at a pretty nice discount next year. And if that's the case, I'm going to be all over him as a post-hype sleeper. I mean, the power is enormous. There was definitely a little bit of worries with a sore elbow that he had, you know, last week, but he's back in the lineup. yeah, it's been disappointing, but this is the kind of thing you expect from a guy like Sano, who is going to swing and miss a lot. There's going to be cold streaks. Unfortunately, he just hasn't gotten it going this year. But, I mean, more than likely, he's still going to end up with, you know, close to 25 home runs from an injury plague kind of year where he was moved around quite a bit to different positions, forced to kind of move around the diamond. That can mess with a young player's head. He's only 23 years old. You know, so he's still extremely young, extremely talented. This, for me, is going to be one of those buy-low candidates going into next season, a guy that is going to go way too cheap as long as he doesn't have a huge September. Mike, what are your thoughts on Miguel Sano?
Yeah, I mean, life could be worse. You could have taken Jason Hayward just a couple picks after him in drafts this year. You could have taken Yasiel Puig, which we all know how that's working out. Maybe even Ben Revere if you wanted to go that route in terms of the outfield. I knew what I was going to expect from him, and that's pretty much what he's doing. Now, I thought it would come with more power, and unfortunately that hasn't happened. But if you look at his, you know, underlying, you know, metrics, he's just a little bit down in home run to fly ball rate. He's actually hitting more fly balls overall. The ISO is a bit down, but he's striking out a bit more than he did last year, which is obviously a negative trend. We want to see that go up a little bit. We knew that he wasn't going to hit 270. You know, that's what he hit last year in, you know, approximately 280 at bats. We knew that wasn't going to be in, you know, his profile moving forward. So in terms of, you know, the future for Sano, he was a 60th overall pick coming into this year. If he goes within, what, you know, 40 picks less, you know, somewhere in the top 100, I'm okay with taking him there, especially in on-base percentage leads, because he consistently walks. That's something he's always had, something he always does. So I think that if you're, especially in an OBP format, willing to take him as your top third baseman next year, somewhere in the, you know, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th round, that's a pretty good bargain for you. And, you know, I think that he's a sure thing for 30 home runs. The Twins lineup, while it has a lot of problems, still has guys like Max Kepler in it. I like some of the, you know, smaller pieces as well, like Jorge Polanco and Eddie Rosario. Those are guys that are going to be sticking there for a while. And, you know, you still have Byron Buxton, you know, rolling around there somewhere, even though he's not very good. Dozier as well. So there's plenty of RBI opportunities here. And he still is a elite power hitter when it's all said and done.
Is he going to have third base eligibility next year?
Oh, yeah. Easy.
Okay. Yeah, he will. He'll still be third games base. Already.
Oh, okay.
I think he'll be DH, too.
Okay. Well, yep. And probably is he going to have outfield eligibility?
Yeah,
too?
29 games at third and 38 games in the outfield so far to this point.
Yeah, he'll be third base outfield.
Yep. Well, and I think that that multi-positional eligibility would be pretty nice. I think he's going to go outside the top 100.
At least you think
so? Yeah.
I don't know. Too much upside, man.
I think when people look at the offseason
maybe
stats.
Maybe not in OBP leagues, but I think in average leagues, I think he could.
Yeah, maybe. But that's the thing, though. In average leagues, you do have to bank on a 240 average. You know, like if he goes higher than a 240, then you can be happy about that and, you know, consider that gravy. But, you know, if you are drafting Sano in an average league, you need to make sure that you grab some other, you know, basically.
Just punt batting average, like I always do.
Yeah.
Just punt, you know, he's the perfect candidate to punt batting average in a batting average league. Kind of guy, because the surrounding stats are going to be fantastic if he does rebound. Matt, what are your thoughts on Miguel Sano?
I just want the Twins to stop messing around with this dude and make him the DH and just let him rake. Just stop trying to play him a third. It's not going to work. I know this is probably with the worst stat in the world, but he has an 879 fielding percentage at third base. 879. Like, that's brutal. 12 errors in 29 games. He's not a third baseman, so stop putting him in there. DH him, let the fat kid rake in the middle of the lineup and hit 40 home runs, because that's what he can do. On base percentage leagues, he's going to be great. Batting average leagues, like you said, he's got to expect 240. But I'm still in. I'd be buying low in dynasty format right now, honestly.
All right, let's move on to Ronaldo Lopez. Seems like this is an episode in which we're talking about a lot of Washington Nationals for some apparent reason. He's had two good starts in a row, including an 11 strikeout performance at the Atlanta Braves. Both his last two starts with the Braves. Matt, what are your thoughts on Lopez? Is this a guy to look at for the future?
The most encouraging thing for me is he had back-to-back starts against the same team, and he went from striking out two guys to 11 guys. So he can prove, he's proven that he can make the adjustments. The walks stayed the same at two. I know we're extremely small sample, but I was wrong about this guy preseason. I had him pegged as a reliever long term. He doesn't have a changeup. It still might be the case, but he's been lights out the last, especially the last start. The rest of the year, especially with Strasburg hurt, he's kind of a guy you need to be picking up whenever you can. Him and Giolito, I think Giolito probably comes up because he would have came up earlier, but he pitched yesterday, being Sunday. So they were in a rush and had to call up AJ Cole for today's start, and I don't think that went very well. But I expect Giolito to take that rotation spot going forward. But him and Reynaldo Lopez, I like them both for the rest of the season. Obviously, Giolito more. But Lopez is going to get you a lot of strikeouts, I think, the rest of the way out. He might not be a whip asset, but he's on a good team. If you play in a wins league, you got to like your chances there. So I'm picking him up wherever he's available.
Tail, what are your thoughts on Lopez moving forward?
Yeah, considering the guy was playing last week head-to-head, picked him up the morning of, and he dropped 11 Ks on me and one earned or whatever in his best start of the season, I'm obviously a huge believer and a huge fan. But, you know, 10.32 Ks per nine right now is obviously great, even though in AAA I get what? He only had a few starts in AAA. I mean, I don't know. I mean, he seems like he's killing it. The high K guys, these are the guys I love, and he's already far superior to Berrios, which is who's killing me. So I'm regretting not picking this guy up instead of holding this bum-ass Twins pitcher, huge prospects who just can't get it together. I don't mean to go off topic, but yes, I like Ronaldo here.
Like I told you in our private chat, Berrios is going to be fine.
Ooh, private chat.
Yeah. Berrios is going to be fine. I'm not worried about him. But Lopez, I got to see him pitch in San Francisco. He looked fantastic for like three innings and then started giving up runs, and they pulled him pretty quick after four. And I think you're going to see a lot of that with him, especially early on.
Only two pitches. Yep.
Yeah, you're going to see times in which he's really on and dominant. But if he loses command of one of those pitches, he's in trouble, you know, because you can't throw one pitch as a starter. You really can't throw two pitches as a starter. Some guys get away with it if one is really electric. So, I mean, this is going to be a guy who's extremely inconsistent. For me, until he can develop the third pitch, he's a streamer against good matchups, teams like Atlanta or things like that. You know, he pitches in a decent ballpark in Washington, so that's nice, and there are some decent parks in that division, Atlanta, Miami. So I would use him as a streamer moving forward, but until he develops another pitch, which he hasn't yet done, I'm not going to roster him full-time. Let's talk about Justin Upton. So if Mike isn't going to, you know, eat crow for Steven Strasburg, he's got to eat some crow for Justin Upton. Mike, eat some crow.
Well, first off, you didn't let me talk about Ronaldo Lopez.
Oh,
so
I'm sorry. I was so excited to make you eat some crow. Go ahead and talk about Lopez.
Well, no, I'll just say with Lopez that is it just me, or does it feel like pitching is not as deep as it has always been?
It's not. It's been – all my teams are getting – destroyed by injuries.
Injuries and then poor performance. I mean, guys like Chris Archer, who's been better as of late, but yeah, disappointing where that, disappointing where you drafted him. It's been a rough year, but that's why I think that's one of the reasons why people were talking about, you know, take starting pitching, you know, your top tier starting pitcher early, because we just don't know. I mean, pitching is one of those kind of sciences that I don't think people have really figured out yet.
Yeah, I'll just say with Lopez, I'm not really, you know, I'm not enamored with him. I think you guys are spot on. He doesn't have three, you know, solid pitches quite yet. I still like his breaking ball. It's not bad. And I like that he has some pretty solid command, but we're going to see kind of ups and downs. But, you know, what I was kind of getting at with the pitching being so shallow this year is, you know, somebody like him is viable. He pitches on a good team. So, you know, a lot of the time you're playing in a wins league, that's, you know, a guy that's viable for you. It looks like his next start is either going to be against the Rockies at home in Washington or at the Phillies. That's not a terrible situation either way, because the Rockies aren't as good on the road. And then you have teams like the Mets, Braves, Phillies, Mets, Braves, Marlins, Pirates, you know, all on tap for the next month. So you might get some pretty decent matchups with somebody like Lopez. So I think that if you have him, you know, he is going to be hitting his innings limit pretty soon. He had almost 100 innings last year. He's already past that now. He's at like 125 or so. I think that you can probably bank on another 4 or 5 starts from him, which is not bad, especially in NL only and deeper mixed. In terms of Justin Upton, there's no description in terms of how mad I am at this guy.
should be mad at yourself.
We mentioned this earlier in the season. Maybe I didn't take the, you know, switching of the going from the National League to the American League into account enough. Maybe I didn't take some of that, you know, and the possibility that he was going to not be given the green light as much on the stolen base, you know, in terms of stolen bases. The thing that I'm most upset about is in one of the shallow leagues I play in, a 12-team league. I literally dropped him like 4 days ago, and the guy that picked him up is the guy that's the commissioner of the league, the guy that's leading the league. And he dropped two like 450-foot bombs on me the day he grabbed him on his team. And I literally have been stashing Justin Upton for the last 3 months. So that's something that really, really upset me. We play a game. We play fantasy baseball, you know, and I'm very numbers oriented, and I love to, you know, look at the analytics and everything. But for me, if you're in a shallow league, drop Justin Upton and fuck that guy, because it's to the, you know, I mean, and I get it. You know, if you're sitting there saying, you know what, I'm going to pick him up, and if he goes on a 10 home run binge the rest of the way, then I got, you know, a really good amount of production from him. I get it, because that's certainly possible, and I will applaud you if you can do it. But the people that have held on to him for 4 or 5 months, bravo, and I'll be meeting you in AA.
Tail, what are your thoughts on Justin Upton?
Is it just me, or has Mike picked up the intensity? I like it. It's reinvigorating me. It's making me all rowdy over here. I'm liking what's happened to Mike here. He just drank a Red Bull or something. But yes, I've been in the same boat. I didn't draft him, but I traded for him pretty early. I thought I was buying low, and I thought, okay, how could he not turn it around? And he's just been, you know, toiling in mediocrity ever since, if that. And then, you know what? I still haven't dropped him. I've been deep enough where I haven't really needed him, and I kind of waited for it. And he would have been on my bench the other day had I not looked at the Razzball Hittertron for that particular day, and they randomly had him rated in, like, the top 20 for that day. He had gone 2-for-4 the day before after they sat him for 3 days. So I was like, okay, maybe the rest got him going a little bit. He's going against Henry Owens, bum ass. And then what do you know? 2 3-run bombs. Boom. He's back. And I think he's going to be good going forward. I would not drop him. That's just me.
Well, I mean, Mike shouldn't be too upset, because I did stream Henry Owens against him in the Dear Mr. Fantasy head-to-head league, because I was getting just killed in the ratios, and I was like, screw it, maybe I'll get some strikeouts here. So that worked out real well. So at least you got that little plus from Justin Upton. I have a hard time seeing exactly what's wrong. He just, you know, the numbers don't really, I mean, he's hitting decently with, you know, he's got a higher hard contact percentage than last year. He's pulling the ball almost the exact same amount. I think this is one of those scenarios that we talk about on occasion with guys that, you know, just because baseball players are on our fantasy teams doesn't mean they're not people too. You know, and maybe he is having a hard time adjusting to a new city, a new team, a new league. And it's just something that can't really be pinpointed, you know, by looking at numbers. He's not walking as much, which is a little bit concerning. But I mean, if he has a huge September, we're going to be talking about paying the same price or pretty close to the same price that we paid this year for Justin Upton. As much as I'm making Mike eat some crow, I paid for Justin Upton in a couple AL only leagues where there is no, like, you know, you don't have a choice. You can't just drop him. You got to just ride it out. So, I think he is a guy that will turn it around eventually. It may not happen this year. It may just be next year. But I'm kind of hoping he just sucks rest of the way and we get him at a discount next year. Matt, what are your thoughts on Justin Upton?
Not touching him at all, man. See ya. He has completely fallen apart. The plate skills have eroded. It's really strange because he's only 28 years old. I don't get it. Looks like whatever he's had the whole season, it looks like he gave it to Melvin too, because Melvin's been shit since the All-Star break. So maybe that whole family.
I would like to say I predicted that.
Yeah, well, yeah, you did. And I mean, I don't even know if he's going to go 2020. He still needs one more home run, but he can't get the ball to the infield anymore. But no, Justin Upton is. I'm with you. I kind of hope he sucks, and then maybe I can grab him or real late next year and try to rotate him in. But I'm to say I know what's going on with him, I'd be lying, because it's baffling. I mean, yeah, he still strikes out a lot, but you knew that coming in. It's been confusing, to say the least.
Hey, how about this, you guys? Since Tejol is tweeting in the middle of the show about Yasmani Tomas, would you take Yasmani Tomas the rest of the way or Justin Upton?
Tomas, no question.
I can't do it.
Got 26.
I can't. I can't do it.
I tweeted out like a week ago or so that Yasmani Tomas has been better than everyone thought he was, including myself.
He was one of my only preseason bold predictions to come true, so I got to mention it every time he goes yard.
Yeah, he's up to 26 home runs now. He's making much harder contacts this year than any other time.
He's a different guy. I mean, his body, he got in shape.
Yeah, there's across the board we're seeing. I would say, yeah, Tomas, especially if you need power.
I still can't do it.
Here's a question for you.
I get it.
In batting average leagues, do you want Tomas or do you want Miguel Sano for next year?
I want Sano.
Sano still, yeah.
Okay. I want the upside.
I think it's pretty close. I mean,
yeah, it is pretty close, but I still want the upside.
Until Puig fell off like a bad dope. Tomas looked like the first kind of big money Cuban to really be a failure, other than I guess Castillo in Boston.
Diane Vicedo.
Absolutely.
The tank.
Was he paid big though? I'm talking about the big money guys. I'm talking the big
he wasn't paid like they were, but he was paid a fair amount.
Right.
He just came over younger, so he went through the minor league system and stuff like that.
Right,
but I have Hector Oliveira takes the cake on that.
Nope. I have a thing for Cubans. I believe in all of them, to and I was very disappointed in Tomas last season. But I wanted to believe in him this year. I felt like he'd be okay. And then obviously, homeboy getting injured for the year left him kind of a spot to be in the outfield a lot more when he had almost been platoon status. So that kind of helped him out there. So we'll see what happens next year. But I'm a fan.
Well, and I think you bring up a good point, because I don't think you were the only one. I think the industry as a whole kind of overrates Cuban prospects. They just look at these guys and they're like, oh, these guys are fully developed. They're not going to have to go to the minors. They're going to hit right away. And that's not always the case, as we've learned. The competition in Cuba is probably comparable. Matt probably would answer this better, but I'd say double A.
That's probably fair. Yeah.
You know, so it's not like they're playing high level competition. So these guys that murder the ball in Cuba and then come over and sign these mega deals, get overhyped. And for the most part, I try to stay away from them because I don't think, you know, some of them are going to be really good. You know, Abreu was great when he first came over. And some of them are going to be, they're going to be misses. And I'm not going to be willing to pay the price what they're going to go for in auction or on a snake draft during draft day. It just, to me, the cost risk reward analysis doesn't work out in my favor the majority of the times. Let's go ahead and talk about some San Francisco Giants. We're going to start with the good. Eduardo Nunez has been on a hot streak as of late. He hadn't been really good since coming over to the Giants, but has really started to pick it up. Seems to finally have kind of found a groove offensively and defensively. Tail, what are your thoughts on Eduardo Nunez?
I don't have a lot of thoughts on Eduardo Nunez. I'm not playing him anywhere. What is the hype going on with this guy in San Francisco right now? I need some background on Nunez here.
Well, when he came over, he, you know, we all knew, I think, the power numbers would kind of struggle a little bit moving to the big stadium at AT&T Park. He wasn't going to hit 12 home runs like he did in the first half. But he's a dude who could still steal some bases. He's stolen, I believe, like 3 in the last 8 or 9 games. He's hitting at a decent clip so far in the last kind of week and a half, 2 weeks. I think he's starting to finally find a groove. They're batting him a second on occasion, which isn't a bad lineup to be batting second in. One of the biggest knocks was, you know, where is he going to play? Is he going to be kind of a super utility guy? But with the trade of Matt Duffy to Tampa Bay, we'll talk about that in a second. He has a full-time spot at third base. He's not going to be a huge power guy at all. But, you know, he's already got 31 stolen bases, and next year he's probably going to be batting in the top half of a pretty decent lineup, and a guy who can steal some bases and one of the few guys on that team who can steal some bases. So he's a guy that I think is going to be a little bit underrated, especially going into drafts next year. And I'm buying in because he's going to have shortstop and third base eligibility.
Perfect player for the Giants. Nothing too exciting, although that is quite a few steals, so I suppose I shouldn't say that. But when everything else is just kind of, somehow the Giants pull it together with all these guys that aren't really special at anything, yet they win World Series like every
other.
All
we do is win, baby.
Yeah.
Not lately.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, the steals alone is worth having. Yeah, and if he's got a little power and whatever on top of that, definitely ownable in fantasy. I probably won't be on any of my teams. I don't do Giants.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Eduardo Nunez?
I like the breakout. The steals, like you guys touched on, the 31 steals to this point with shortstop and third baseman eligibility. I mean, I think he can comfortably be a nice, safe option for you late in drafts. With Duffy getting traded, he's got that third base job for the Giants next year. We already touched on him a lot this year. I mean, you got to love it. He's hitting for power. Drive, he's considerably more power than he's ever had before. And he's barreling the ball up. I mean, he's not walking a ton, but that never really was his game. You got to be excited about him at least a little bit. He's intriguing.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Nunez?
You know, this is the best you'll ever see Nunez in a full season. Since he's went over to the Giants, you know, you're looking at a guy that's hit 250, you know, in 84 plate appearances. He does have 3 triples and 5 doubles, which is nice to see. And, you know, you mentioned the 4 stolen bases. That's also nice to see. But, you know, prior to that, you know, he was the number one shortstop on the ESPN player radar. I mean, he had 12 home runs and, you know, 27 stolen bases at the time when he was traded. And now he's dropped down to the 11th. I think that he's more with shortstop being as good as it's been this year and expecting a little bit of, you know, a rise from some of the guys that weren't as good this year. And then, you know, implementing guys like, Alex Bregman and Tim Anderson into the fold, depending on, you know, what their, you know, actual eligibility is and everything. But, for Nunez, at least next year, he's going to be playing third the majority of the time. You know, begs the question, you know, if he will be shortstop eligible after next season in keeper dynasty leagues. But, you know, he's not this type of player. He's a batting average asset that can steal bases. I don't think he eclipses 30 next year. I think he's more of a 15 to 20 guy, and he'll probably hit, you know, close to double digit home runs. Yeah. So, I mean, I think he's like a 15 to 20 shortstop going into next year, and for the rest of the way I think he's about the same.
Let's go ahead and move on to and talk about Matt Moore. We'll start with you, Mike, because you traded him to my fucking Giants from your stupid goddamn Tampa Bay Rays. He has been god awful since coming over, just walking everybody, giving up home runs. Mike, please, like, walk me off the ledge, because I'm starting to lose my goddamn mind.
He actually was posting a career high in walk rate prior to leaving and going to the Giants this year. You know, you mentioned it's been kind of a rocky road. He's walked 17 guys in his first 23 innings as a Giant and struck out 22. I mean, the strikeouts are there, which is nice, I guess. And it's really been against competition that, you know, Pittsburgh, you know, while they've been doing better as a team, their offense hasn't been doing great at all. The Mets are obviously up and down, and Miami's up and down, especially without Stanton. Overall, like, what can you expect the rest of the way? Again, with pitching being so you know, just shallow this year. And the fact that Matt Moore plays in such a pitcher friendly ballpark, there's no way you can drop him. Even in shallower formats like 12 team leagues, I can't really even recommend him as a streamer because I think he's too valuable, especially, you know, across the next, you know, 6-7 weeks to just drop. I think it's really going to come down to whether the Giants, whether you can believe that the Giants can kind of turn this around. I have a feeling that they told him, you know what, people will swing at your stuff here in the National League, you know, just make sure that the stuff, you know, the mechanics are sound, and, you know, hopefully you'll get some swings and misses. And obviously that hasn't come so far with him, you know, but I still think that he is a, you know, has a ton of upside overall. You know, to end the year, you still have the Cubs, you have the Rockies in Coors Field, you got the Diamondbacks in Chase Field, you have the Cardinals. The only layup you get is the Padres. You have two series against the Padres the last month of the season in September. So hopefully Matt Moore can get a couple starts there, because obviously the Padres are just an absolute layup right now. But overall, I think you obviously can't trust him. You kind of have to just go matchups to matchups, but don't drop him.
Well, and the Padres too have been better against left-handed pitching too
for the season.
I mean, not as of late, but for the season they have been. I've not been a big Matt Moore fan since the get-go, since the beginning when everybody was high on him, and he was looking like he was going to turn into the next stud pitcher. I was kind of out. I'm continuing that even with the Giants. I think there will be better days ahead because I trust the pitching coaches and Dave Rigetti in San Francisco to help him turn things around. But I don't think he is going to be what some people thought he would be in San Francisco. Dude just has unbelievably bad control. I mean, and that's just the bottom line. Like, it doesn't matter if you're pitching in the biggest ballpark in the world and suppressing the home runs if you can't find the goddamn strike zone. And that's the problem with Matt Moore at times. So I'm completely out, as I have been for quite a while. Tejo, are you in or out on Matt Moore?
Man, Matt Moore is like the hot chick who everybody's like banged, but you haven't. But like, you know, you know she's like a total slut, but yet you're totally just have to have, like, I mean, he keeps sucking me back in when I know I should stay away. The walk rate is disgusting. I don't know what to do. I've been obsessed with this guy for years. I think he kind of came up around the same time as Strasburg. He's been a disappointment all his life. The injuries, now with the control, has always been an issue. But yeah, in the National League over there, he could throw a gem at any day. I think he's worth throwing out, especially depending on the matchup, for sure. Like, I definitely would be throwing him out there. As you mentioned, pitching isn't that great overall this year, so he's got to be owned. But, you know, when anytime you're walking that many people, all it takes is one little slip, and all of a sudden you've given up seven earned in one inning or something like that. And that's where you don't want to be in the fantasy playoffs head-to-head, because that's going to sting, and that's going to cost you dearly.
Matt, what are your thoughts on your namesake?
He's an embarrassment to my first name. He walks way, way too many guys, like you guys touched on. But like Tail said, with the way pitching is in the leagues, I actually do. Mike, we're doing a retrade. How about that? Mike traded me Matt Moore in a dynasty league. I want to trade him back because I don't like him.
For a little Michael Feliz action.
Yeah. Francis Martez, even worse.
It was even worse. Sorry.
But I want to do a trade back because Matt Moore is hot garbage. He walks way too many guys, and I mean, I have to roll him out there because I have about six starting pitchers on the DL, so he's going to get starts for me. But he makes me very nervous every time I do it.
Well, trade me Schwarber in that league, and I'll give you some starting pitching.
Yeah, man, I don't know how to value Schwarber. He's a confusing player for me.
Think about this though, like from a keeper dynasty perspective, he's going to be with the Giants at least unless they trade him.
That was my thought process. I'm going to have for him
for multiple years. You know, like, is there you know, in keeper dynasty leagues, with him being so bad right now, especially if you're out of it, isn't there a case to be made that you can pick him up for probably pennies on the dollar, and you know, acquire possibly a guy that can be, you know, solid for the next couple of years? Like, he's not this bad in the walk rate. Like, I understand he's been inconsistent in his career, but you just don't go from being a guy that was posting a career best walk rate this year to, you know, just completely going the other way and staying that way forever. There has to be an adjustment made at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's this bad, but I don't think he's that good either. You know, the park is only going to help so much if he can't stop walking guys. And he's always had an issue with his control. So, I mean, it's not, like I said, I trust the pitching coaches, especially Dave Urgetti in San Francisco. I think he'll help him get better, but I don't think he's ever going to get back to being a top 30 starter.
Yeah.
I just don't, you know. Let's move on, and we're going to talk about Alex Gordon, who is having a really hot streak, and I just want to know if people are buying in on it, you know, and kind of riding the rest of the way, or if this is just, you know, a flash in the pan. 5 home runs in the last 6 games, absolutely killing the ball for the Royals. Tejo, are you riding the hot streak, or are you jumping off?
Sure. I mean, why not? Why not get something out of this bum on the season, right? I mean, this guy's been absolutely useless all season long. I know people love the contract he signed. I was like the only one ripping it just because I'm like, I still can't fathom like the contracts that these baseball players sign. And I know he's good defensively and his WAR was so high and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, dude, I don't care what his WAR was. Or whatever, this guy's 32 years old. He hit, what, last year? 270 with 19 homers? Like, give me a break. That is, like, not – that's, like, Seth Smith numbers. And it doesn't excite me whatsoever. I can't believe he got paid like that. He's always been a disappointment. He was a huge prospect, third baseman. Now he's an okay outfielder, and he's hitting 225 on the season. The Royals season's in the tank. But, hey – we don't care about any of that stuff in fantasy. All we care is that he's hitting right now as we speak. So, yes, ride it out while it happens because it's not going to last for too long. But, hey, go for it.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Alex Gordon?
Well, I mean, you kind of have to ride it out, see what you got. It's just late in the season. You're not going to cut him or probably too late to trade him. So ride it out. I mean, over the last month, he's slashing 270, 365, 510. And that's not too far off from the career line. I mean, the batting average and the on-base percentage will always be there with him. He's got a high floor as far as that goes. I mean, he's going to hit about 260, 270. You know that. You know what you're getting there. But he has a strong walk rate. The 365 on-base percentage is right in line with his career. Over the last 30 days, with 377, 351, he's always up there. He's hitting for more power now, which I think that kind of comes and goes. He might be getting over that wrist injury that he's always had. Like that. Didn't he just break his wrist or something like that, or shoulder?
Yeah, he had some sort of arm issue.
Yeah, so, I mean, that might be coming back, and who knows? Might be the cortisone shots, whatever, all that good stuff. You never know what you got for a short stint, but, I mean, you got to ride it out. I don't trust the power, but I think the average and the on-base percentage are about right.
I don't know. I'm kind of in Tejo's camp. This guy is just an absolute disappointment in every aspect. I mean, like, good for him that he got paid, though. 4 years, $72 million plus an option. Like, I mean, I'd love to do that and be mediocre at my job, too. I'm not buying in on this hot streak. I think, you know, it'll probably end here pretty quick. I mean, if you want to ride it out, you ride it out. But for the most part, I don't think Alex Gordon, especially with the depth in the outfield, registers outside of, you know, 15 team or AL only. So, and even 15 team leagues, there's a number of guys that may be available still, especially with September call-ups about to happen, that are probably worth more rest of the way. So, I'm out on Alex Gordon. Mike, what are your thoughts on Gordon?
I mean, he's available in a ton of leagues. I mean, he's 33% owned on you, and absolutely rightfully so. He's been absolutely hideous, you know, this whole entire year. But he does have a strong walk rate. You know, he's shown that he can do that throughout his career. There's no way that he keeps on, you know, showing us this crazy bad contact rate. 67% for the season is way below what he's done in throughout his whole entire career. So I think that we could see a turnaround here the last month, especially with the Royals kind of surging. They have a really good schedule the rest of the way, which I know nobody can just really bank on or whatever. But I don't think that this is a guy that, you know, the Royals would have paid if they thought he was completely done. There's a definite definitely a story I can tell myself where he hits another 5-8 bombs the rest of the way and carries a pretty solid batting average. And, you know, that can help in a ton of leagues. Is there a ton of outfielders that can do that in short stints? Absolutely. If you're asking me between him and like Aaron Altair the rest of the way, probably would go with Altair or Altair, whatever, however you pronounce that. Yasmani Tomas, another guy, you know, I probably would go with him. But regardless, I think in deeper leagues, especially AL only, if you did pick him up and, you know, if you want to pick him up for at least the stretch run here, I think he's a viable guy to grab. It's at least for the final month because the schedule is so good and because he's not this bad.
All right, let's go ahead and talk about Rougned Odor. You know, he was a guy I was pretty high on coming into the season. Mike, I think you were pretty high on him too. What have you thought so far? And then moving into next year, what are your thoughts on Odor?
Yeah, I don't know why he's really on the list, to be honest. Like, there's not much analysis to give. He's one of the elite guys at second base. Does it come with, you know, variations in his production? Absolutely. And he's done a terrible job of walking this year overall, but he's not somebody that we're looking for in walks, for walks. So in on-base percentage formats, that's something that you need to monitor for next season as well. He's definitely more of a 5x5 guy as opposed to an OBP format, you know, player. But, you know, he's the type of guy that, you know, we never really expected him, especially based on his minor league profile, to be a 20 home run, you know, consistent 20 home run performer. And based on his underlying, you know, skills, it seems like that's something he can do. The Texas Rangers lineup is, in my opinion, one of the best in baseball. It's going to continue to be that way in the next few years. You know, this year he was, I think he was drafted sometime between what he was like the number 7 or 8 second baseman off the board, number 6, 94 overall. So next year I expect him to get bumped up to about, you know, a 6th round player or so. And based on the position being so deep, I don't necessarily think you have to buy him, but I do think he is going to be consistent. I think he's going to hit for 20 home runs for at least the next 3, 4, 5 years here. And he still has a solid stolen base skill as well. I think he's at least a double digit guy in that category and solid contact ability as well. So, you know, you are going to have to deal with the ebbs and flows of a season with him. You know, he's a guy that always has, you know, variance in his skills and in his actual output from, you know, month to month. But for the rest of the year and for the future, I think he's a top, at least top 7 second baseman.
Yeah, I put him on the list because when I wrote this list, he was kind of scuffling over the course of the last week. It only had like 3 hits in like 10 days or something like that, but hit a home run on the 20th. So, you know, maybe he's bouncing back a little bit from this, just a small stretch of kind of being slowed down. Plus, you know, he's delivered a pretty nice season so far. 23 home runs, 11 stolen bases in one of the best lineups in baseball. Again, a guy I was really high on this year. I have a lot of shares. I've been pretty pleased with production, and I think that he isn't going to cost an extreme amount on draft day next year. So going into next year, I think he's going to come at a pretty reasonable price, especially considering the depth at second base. So I really like Odor moving forward. Tail, what are your thoughts on Odor?
Hodor.
Odor, I love the man. 22 years old, second base. At first, I hated him because he was holding up Profar, my boy. And Odor, now they have both of them. If they could get rid of Elvis Andrews somehow, things would be all good, but they can't because of the contract. So we're stuck with Elvis at shortstop, which isn't the end of the world, but whatever. Odor is an absolute monster with the fists, with the bat, 23 bombs. He's, again, 22 years of age. And anytime somebody's this young, putting in this kind of work, there's so much upside to be had. I mean, it's not going to get – I mean, what is the upside? He's 22 years old. I mean, could this guy hit 40 homer? I mean, is that in him? Can he go Brett Boone, get steroided up, and hit 40 for us real quick? Or can he do that naturally? I don't know. Maybe this is his peak, 25. 30. Maybe that's his peak. That's a pretty good peak, though, and he's only 22 years old. So, and there's upside, and he's already one of the best. Yeah, lock that up.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Odor moving forward?
Love him. Minor complaint about the walk rate, like Mike mentioned, kind of falling apart. But, I mean, if the walk rate falling apart means he's going to hit for more power, then I'll take that trade-off. Can't complain. Top easily top 5 second baseman for me next year. Probably will go, I'd imagine he's going to go around round 6 or so in 12-team leagues, maybe. I think that's pretty good value there if you can snatch him up. Second base is deep, but I'm still paying up for Odor because I love the kid.
All right. That's going to wrap us up. Going a little bit over time today, but I hope everybody enjoyed it. Tejol, thank you for coming on, my friend.
Oh, thank you guys, man. It's been way too long, again, for reasons I'm not aware, but still, it's been way too long. I really appreciate it, and I look forward to coming on again very soon.
Well, we're going to have you on very soon for football, for sure. Got to get you on and get you preaching some Tyrod here for football season coming up. definitely remind people again where they can reach you on social media.
Again, it's Lord Bedick on Twitter and Snapchat. Actually, wait, yeah. And Snapchat, same thing, just Lord Bedick. That's it. That's all. It's very simple. Lord Bedick. That's it. That's all. Find me there, and we're good to go.
All right. Mike, why don't you tell people what you're working on and where people can reach you on Twitter?
Yeah, I'm working on figuring out whether I should drop Aaron Sanchez in certain leagues or not.
No, so hold him. Hold him.
I know, Matt, okay? Christ. No, don't drop Aaron Sanchez. Yeah, you can reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. You can definitely check out the various podcasts we do for baseball. Check out the football shows. We're coming on strong with those. Check out my race updates on fantasypros.com. Check out my daily matchups column on baseballhq.com. And you can also check out my, if you're into football, you can check out some of my stuff on friendswithfantasybenefits.com and for Fantasy Pros as well, doing the Houston Texans stuff.
Whoa. Don't forget I'm on Fantasy Pros too, guys. Let's not forget.
And Tejol, is it Lord Bedick or like Laud Bedick? Like L-A-W-D Bedick on your social media?
I know what you're doing, but no, it's Lord.
Matt, why don't you tell people where you can reach and what you're working on?
It's MD Tomp, T-H-O-M-P, 2-4 on Twitter. I just published a piece about my favorite underrated hitting prospect and favorite underrated pitching prospect in the minors. So go check that out and let me know if you want more of that stuff from me in the future or just lists, because I know everyone loves lists. So hit me up on Twitter, talk some ball. Tejol, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And you can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. Email me or the show, friendswithfantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can read anything I write for football right now on Fantasy or on Friends with Fantasy Benefits, anything I write for baseball on FanGraphs. I'm doing quite a bit over there. I'm doing a bunch of the daily notes right now on top of my typical Wednesday article, which I haven't figured out what I'm going to write about yet again this week. But my last
Doc article, Gooden. Doc Gooden, Daryl Strawberry.
No, I probably won't do that this time, but I was thinking maybe I'd write about guys that have struggled this year and praying that they're not going to bust out like Miguel Sano and how we talked about him, but I don't know, figure something out because it's due on Wednesday and it's Monday night, so. and then definitely give us a rate and review on iTunes. That really helps us out. Check out the football podcast with Mike, Eli, and myself. That has been getting going, so getting ready for football, finishing up baseball, and I'm starting back in college actually tomorrow, so that should be an interesting time. So
back to school.
Yeah.
Back
to school,
Rodney Dangerfield style, baby. I love it.
I know, Billy Madison.
I'm going to feel like the old man in all my classes. It's going to be absolutely fantastic.
They got that gray beard, so you're fit right in.
Well, that is going to wrap us up. For Tejol, Mike, Matt, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.
Make sure you pack a snack pack, Justin.
That'll get you some hits on the first day.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'm not looking forward to school tomorrow.
Back to school. to prove to dad that I'm not a fool. I've got my something wrapped up. I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with it.